void. Up next on Think, do Facebook friendships even count? Many of us now have hundreds of these online social contacts, and let's face it, there are probably dozens who wouldn't make the list if we were planning a party. We'll spend this hour with Atlantic senior editor Julie Beck, who's been looking into the curious 21st century dynamic of the social media relationship, how it compares with the way we interact with our buddies IRL, that's in real life, and what happens when we exceed the number of social relationships anthropologist Robin Dunbar believed the human brain evolved to handle. Our conversation starts after a short break. You can't have too many friends, right? That statement is literally true, according to anthropologist Robin Dunbar. Back in the 90s, Dunbar studied primate behavior and gathered information about hunter-gatherer societies, Neolithic village ruins, and Hutterite colonies, did some calculations factoring in brain size, and came up with Dunbar's number, the maximum amount of people with whom any one of us can maintain a stable interpersonal relationship. What does that mean exactly? Dunbar explained it as people we know well enough that we'd feel comfortable joining them uninvited for a drink if we ran into them at a bar. And he said the maximum for any of us is 150. Actually, his calculations came out to 148, but he rounded up. So what does any of that say about the hundreds of friends many of us have on Facebook? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Julie Beck is senior editor at The Atlantic. She's been thinking about how social media can distort our relationships, creating daily opportunities for us to interact with people who, let's face it, you might not have even recognized in a bar before you connected online. You can read her essay, Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die, on The Atlantic website. She joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington. Julie, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
You call Facebook the unicorn blood of friendship. So for non-Harry Potter fans, what does that mean?
Sure. So in the first Harry Potter book, Voldemort, sorry for the spoilers, drinks some unicorn blood. And basically, it's if you drink unicorn blood because it's such like a pure creature or whatever, from then on, you will live forever. Nothing, you know, you won't die, but it will be sort of a cursed life, a half life, because you've slain something defenseless. And so, you know,
that's I'm really just, harsh for I'm Facebook.
I'm just reporting what they said. But no, I mean, it's not that, you know, Facebook is killing anything pure or defenseless, but I think there is something where you do make a bargain with Facebook, and what ends up happening, the price of that is that all of these relationships that would have otherwise naturally passed away are living this weird sort of half-life instead, and they never quite die.
Yeah, there are all these people that we have on our list of friends with whom we have little or no contact in the outside world, and it seems sometimes like Facebook's algorithms encourage that ongoing contact.
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, obviously it behooves them to promote connection and interaction on the platform, but I think there's also sort of a weird cultural understanding that finding old friends that you've lost touch with is kind of what Facebook is for. You know, I talked to someone who had just gotten a personal Facebook really recently, which I feel like you don't come across that often. And she was like, yeah, I used my old high school picture because I wanted people that I used to know to find me.
Hmm. Yeah, you're younger than I am, but there was a site called like classmates.com or reunions.com or something, and that seemed like the place people were looking for each other, and then Facebook came along and everybody let that website go away for reunions.
Right. Well, there's, you know, Facebook isn't the first social network by any means. You know, we were all on Zanga, which was sort of like a live journal-y blogging sort of thing in high school. And then there was MySpace and so on and so forth. But I think the scale of Facebook and how long it has been around, you know, compared to the lifespan of the internet makes it really unique.
And now Facebook's doing this thing where it encourages you to celebrate the anniversary of the day you declared someone your friend on Facebook, which for most of us has nothing to do with how we got to know this person.
Yeah, they'll show you a little video and it's like your friendiversary, and the algorithm like puts some different photos of you guys that were both, you were both tagged in into it. And I don't know how they choose which friendships to feature that way. I suspect it would have something to do with who you interact with the most. But they don't do it for all the friends, just whoever the algorithm chooses.
And they won't tell us what those algorithms are.
No, I mean, they're not very forthcoming with data like that.
So you note that Facebook encourages a lot of vestigial friendships, like keeping in touch with somebody we met at summer camp or somebody who moved away in fourth grade. And you say this can be pleasant or it can be annoying. What determines that?
I mean, I think it's just a new category of relationship, and it's sort of value neutral. We just have these wide extended networks of people that we used to know or who are connected to us in some very distant way. You know, maybe you have one class with them in college, or maybe you never even met them, but you just found them on Ancestry.com and it said you were fifth cousins, decided to add them for some reason. And that can be nice. I mean, if you want to go and see what your old high school friends are up to without, you know, having to have an awkward conversation or something, or texting them out of the blue. And it can also be nice, you know, because people who are more distantly connected to us tend to be people who are the most different to us. Our close friends tend to be very similar to us in a lot of ways, you know, education or socioeconomic wise or just geographically. And research shows that these weak ties, they call them, tend to be more different. And that's where you may be exposed to new perspectives that you might not otherwise hear from. But of course, you know, we all have the experience of the Facebook friend who, you know, posts too many memes or, you know, goes on, you know, long political rants that you don't agree with. And so maybe you don't, that spoils your good memories of them. I don't know.
So let's talk a little about Dunbar's number, which is somewhere around 150 people. Within that number are these like concentric circles of best friends and close friends and casual friends and acquaintances. How many faces can we even recognize in the real world?
Yeah, so 150 is the one that's most often cited, but like you said, there's a lot of different, depending how you want to slice it, it could be all sorts of numbers. So like 5 is the smallest one. That's your, you know, most intimate group of people, and that may be your family, that may be some family, some friends. And people can also kind of move in and out of that, like your closest people right now might be different than they were 6 months ago. But then if you expand that out, I think it goes to 500 is what you would call acquaintances. So that gets into the realm of Facebook friends a little bit. And then the absolute biggest one, I believe, is 1,500. And that's literally just how many faces could you put a name to. And all of these are fungible, right? Like it's not a hard stop at 150, but it's about that.
Don't we use Facebook, though, in a way that kind of reflects Dunbar's number and his estimates of those friendship hierarchies? Like, the majority of people I interact with on Facebook the most are people who are also part of my life off the website.
Right. I mean, you know, I wish I knew the answer to that. I wish Facebook would provide that data, but they do not. I think there was a lot of, you know, hand-wringing, especially earlier on in Facebook's lifespan about, oh no, you know, these large networks of people are going to make people have more friendships, but they're going to be shallower. And we're going to be like, you know, spreading our wild likes across the wheat fields of 2,000 friends or whatever it is. But I don't know if people actually do that. And, you know, there isn't data to say that that is or isn't how most people use the platform. A lot of people that I spoke to, researchers who study Facebook, seem to suspect that we probably use it kind of in the way you're saying, where we just, you know, use it as a supplementary way to interact with our actual friends or our closer friends. And then there's just sort of an ambient awareness of these other people who are also there. But I don't know for certain that that is how most people use the platform.
Do we know how much time the average user spends on Facebook in a given day or week?
That may be out there, but again, I don't know. And I think it's also possible that whatever statistic is out there is a couple years old, which in Facebook lifespan, given how often they change the website, I don't know how applicable that would be.
So you say that we tend to have like ambient awareness of Facebook friends that we're not really in contact with. And I think this is very interesting because it's like people that we might not even be hitting like a lot on their posts, but we're aware that they got a new car or, they're starting graduate school or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely tell you right now which of my high school friends are pregnant, and I don't, like, go look up their profile or anything or even communicate with them, but it's just something that you just become aware of the information because it comes up somewhere on the feed at some point. And again, like, that, maybe that's nice. Maybe you want to just sort of keep up with people in this passive way, and that's, it's nice to know what they're up to, especially if you can't, you know, make it to a high school reunion or something like that. But it is strange, and it is something that we wouldn't have had for most of human history.
Do you think that ambient awareness and that just kind of mild interest in people that are not really part of our lives, does it draw energy away from our closer friends, the people that we would otherwise do things with in real life?
I mean, again, if I'm going to answer from, like, a scientific perspective, I have to say I don't know, because, well, you know, what are the studies on that? Where is the data on that? But I think probably not. I mean, you know, we're aware, you know, we spend plenty of our energy on, like, fictional people or on The Real Housewives or on whatever YouTubers you watch, and, like, that's not a real relationship either. But I don't think it detracts from spending time with your actual friends. I think that there is, you know, there, of course, there may be people who use the platform in that way, or who are, you know, spending a lot of time on there looking at the profiles of people who they don't really spend time with. But I mean, for a lot of close friendships, there's a theory called media multiplexity theory, which basically says that the more platforms friends use to communicate, so, you know, in person, texting, Facebook, etc., then the deeper the friendship. And so I think people would generally say that a Facebook friendship that is Facebook alone is not a very deep friendship, or perhaps even a friendship at all.
You write about the fact, yeah, that there are some friendships that we have on Facebook that seem normal, but if that person suddenly, like, knocked on our front door or even called us, it would seem out of place.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. And it's just, it's the question of context, right? Like, Facebook is its own environment for friendships. And so maybe you have some old high school friend that you guys like each other's posts sometimes, if, like, they get good news or something, or there's a cute baby picture or whatever, and that's not weird, like, that's sort of established as, like, that's what this relationship is now. But I bet if you texted them to say, like, you know, congrats on the big promotion, that would be awkward and strange, and they would not know how to respond to that. And it's just because moving it to a more intimate context, I think a lot of these Facebook-only relationships couldn't survive that.
I've been fascinated by how quickly the etiquette has developed around this platform. It's kind of unwritten, but everybody most people, I guess, understand that you're not supposed to call or text somebody who's just a Facebook friend. It's just interesting the way humans immediately have to have a set of rules around anything that involves a lot of other humans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is true, but I also don't know if I agree that everyone intuitively understands this etiquette, because I think it isn't established and it isn't monolithic. Like, I think it depends a lot on generation, and it depends a lot on how online you are. If you're extremely online, maybe you know more about how your social group thinks you should act on these different platforms, blah, blah, blah. But I think, you know, a lot of people have probably had the experience of, like, getting a random Facebook message from someone that you don't talk to, or, like, oh my goodness, like, who writes on my wall for happy birthday every year is just so fascinating to me, because it's some of it is real friends, but so many of it is these very random connections, and we don't communicate through the rest of the year, and yet still that they are still trucking on that, and it's very interesting. So I don't know that we all understand exactly how everyone else thinks it's appropriate to act on different platforms. But what I do know is that, like, if it's a close friend, it doesn't really matter. We tend to forgive our close friends of the bad behavior, you know, whether it's they canceled your dinner plans at the last minute, or, you know, they sent you kind of a weird message on Twitter that didn't make sense. If it was someone who was an acquaintance or was, like, a Facebook-only friend and they did that, that would be pretty weird. But if your best friend does it, you're going to brush it off.
My guest is Atlantic senior editor Julie Beck. We're talking about her piece, Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die. You can read it on the Atlantic website. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Julie Beck, who is senior editor at The Atlantic and has a piece on its website called Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email us, think@kera.org. So these weak ties that we have often on social media like Facebook, they do serve different functions than strong ones. And you note that they can be good to draw on for, like, for information or if we need help with something. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting. I think, you know, we might think of these relationships as just sort of hanging around and serving no purpose. But there has been research that shows that when people ask for help, whether that's, you know, something horrible has happened and they need emotional support, or they're just looking for a book recommendation or anything where they sort of put out a request, you know, to their network, they tend to get that help. And a lot of times it's the weak ties who respond. And because so many of the weak ties are more different from us than our close friends, it may be that they're the ones who have the information you're looking for and not your close friends.
Do you find that most people set rules for themselves on Facebook? Like, for example, I try to limit my Facebook friends to people I've actually met and consider friends, but that's not always easy. And sometimes I accept requests from people that kind of don't quite rise to that level. So I'm wondering how most people decide whether they're going to friend somebody or not.
I think that, you know, everybody's different. I think there are some people who try to keep it pretty strict as to, like, only people I know, and they would actually, sometimes people, you know, will do a purge and they're like, all right, it's time to get rid of these, you know, 200 college friends that I have one class with or something like that. But there was an interesting study, I think it was in 2012, so, you know, how much that reflects today's Facebook culture, I don't really know, but they asked a bunch of college students what the rules for interaction on Facebook were. And they came up with a lot of stuff. You know, I think it was like, you know, respect people's time on Facebook, or like, don't, you know, ask for too many things. But some of them did seem to reflect this idea that if you are actually friends with someone, you have to not only limit your interaction to Facebook. So I think one of the rules, quote unquote, was like, wish somebody happy birthday on a way other than Facebook. Or I think one was, you know, only friend people that you've actually met offline, but not everybody, you know, endorsed every rule. There was another that I think was, you know, communicate with this person in some way other than Facebook. So I think even back then, people were sort of trying to come up with the etiquette. And I think to some degree, it always varies person by person.
And yet, as you report, lots of people find their lists of friends creeping up to 200, 300. Some people have 2,000 Facebook friends.
Yeah, well, you do have to do something to get those friends to go away, right? It's otherwise, they just stay there. And that's sort of what I'm saying, where it's, you know, friendships will never quite die on Facebook unless you kill them, unless you go in and unfriend the people. And, you know, because they are occasionally useful and because you don't have to do anything to keep them around and you do have to take an action for them to not be around, it probably just seems easier to let them linger.
And of course, it's, you know, you might unfriend someone because you think, well, we're not really that close and they're probably not interested in me and I'm not all that interested in them. But you might have no hard feelings, but it never feels that way if somebody realizes that you've unfriended them.
Right. I think there is an element of that, too. Like, you're wondering if it's rude to unfriend this person who you never talked to and probably will never see again. Because it is a deliberate act. You're sort of making a deliberate choice to say, I don't want to even see your posts anymore. I don't even want to have the option of talking to you. And I don't think that's actually what people mean when they unfriend you. A lot of the time, they probably are just trying to keep their news feed a little more manageable. But I agree that it could feel that way.
Your article made me think about, you know, what if Facebook somehow limited us to Dunbar's number? If they said everybody gets 150 friends and you were constantly having to sort of like make decisions at the margins about who stays and who goes, it would be an interesting exercise for people.
I mean, they would never do that, but sure. It sort of reminds me of like MySpace Top 8, if you remember that. It was like you could have as many friends as you wanted, I think, but there was this little box that you had to curate with your top 8 friends. And it was, I mean, I was in high school when MySpace was a thing, so it was very dramatic who was in and who was not in your top 8.
Huh. You know, one thing that's really interesting about Facebook is that from the get-go, they've used the words, the word friend, and turned friend into a verb. Some of the other social media platforms, I mean, on Instagram and on Twitter, we talk about followers, and somehow it's not quite as fraught.
Yeah, I think, well, Instagram is interesting, especially since they've been bought by Facebook, and it makes me wonder if that would change. But I think you're a lot less aware of who follows you if you don't follow them back. Because unless you're going in and scrolling through to see, you know, who are your followers, you probably won't remember. But that's a lot more. I mean, those platforms are a lot more like shouting into the void and then see what the void throws back at you. It's right. Like, there's some interaction, but I think it's less community oriented, at least, you know, in theory, than Facebook.
All right, I want to go to the phones. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We're at KERA Think. We have Jennifer calling from Flower Mound. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I just had an observation and was interested in the author's take on this. I have a lot of conflicted feelings about Facebook for a lot of the reasons you guys have already mentioned, but I have an interesting situation with a Facebook friend. We went to high school together. We weren't friends in high school, but friendly. We kind of reconnected at a class reunion, became Facebook friends. We live in different states, so she's not somebody I'm going to see, but just in the course of our Facebook relationship, if you will, I've just learned so much about her that I didn't realize, I guess, with the preconceived notions and cliques you run with in high school. And we've actually become so much closer, I think, because of Facebook. And I was wondering if the author had any opinions about that or had come across any, how often things like that might happen in her research.
Thanks for calling, Jennifer.
Yeah, well, I don't know, you know, how often things like that happen in terms of data. But I think, yeah, that happens. I'm just going to say off the cuff, I think that happens all the time. I mean, people will reconnect on Facebook, or maybe they will join a group for like a shared interest and make offline friends in that way. And I think there are a lot of really interesting connections that happen that couldn't have happened without Facebook. So again, it's not all entirely bad. It's just new and kind of strange if you think about it in the context of all of human history. But yeah, I mean, you take the good with the bad, I think.
What do you think accounts for the fact that Facebook started as something, you know, 15 years ago was for like a lot of college kids drove it at first, and then high school kids, and then 20-somethings. And now, at least for my teenagers, they have Facebook accounts, but that's really for the grown-ups. How did the shift happen?
I mean, I think once the old people get on anything, it's not cool anymore. So what are you going to do? But I think there's also an element of Facebook just got too big. And people will sometimes talk about, you know, context collapse of how you used to be able to tailor sort of what you put on the internet to different contexts or different communities that maybe you were a part of before we all sort of became part of this huge Facebook community. And now anything you post on there, it's like, you know, your parents see it, your extended family members see it, your friends from school see it, your colleagues see it, you know, randos might see it. So you have to kind of present yourself in a different way, or just, you know, we've been around on Facebook long enough now to know that, like, you do have to be careful about what you post on there sometimes if you don't want other people to see it. So I think maybe for the teens, and I don't presume to speak for the teens, it's just not fun to have to, you know, be that careful or think about that many different audiences. You might want to go to somewhere a little more insular, like Instagram or Snapchat or something, where it's just your friends.
Yeah, people have more control over who they're talking to. And there's the whole idea of, you know, setting yourself up, even in the most casual way, as kind of a brand. If you're communicating to presumably 500 people, you do have to think differently about the language you use, even.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Facebook has tools where you can say, I only want to share it with these people, or you can make lists of friends, like, you know, college friends, and then only share things with them. But I have to say, I don't feel like people really use those that much, because it's just a lot of effort to go in and categorize all your friends and decide exactly who you want to see every single thing. So I think the default is probably just to not post anything that you wouldn't be comfortable with your entire friend list seeing.
Do you feel like the loss of trust in Facebook after, like, the Cambridge Analytica thing is changing the way people interact on the site? Are people pulling away?
So I actually did another story about this a few months back, or shortly after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, a couple months later. And it was not, you know, a scientific survey, but we did a survey of readers or whoever we could find, and sort of asked, you know, yeah, does this change the way that you act on Facebook, or even whether you have a Facebook? And I think, I don't remember off the top of my head the exact results, but basically the answer is yes. Like, I think people are aware of these privacy scandals, and to a degree, it affects behavior, but a lot of what people said was just like, you know, I'm more careful about what I post, which could mean any number of things. There were a very, you know, small subset of people who said, yeah, I deactivated my account, or I deleted my account as a result of that. There were people who I think had sort of shifted more to using other social networks. So I think people are definitely aware of it at this point, and it probably is having a broad effect. But at the same time, there's some sort of, you know, privacy nihilism going on, where you just can't keep up with all the different ways that all the different companies are collecting your data. And so at a certain point, it becomes hard to feel like you have any control over that.
My guest is Atlantic senior editor Julie Beck. We're talking about her article, Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. It is interesting that we've arrived at a place, Julie, where what we put online in some ways carries more weight than what we actually say out loud in a group of people who are, like, physically present in a room with us. It's almost like what happens in real life is ephemeral, but what happens online, that counts.
I don't know if I would say that. I mean, it's certainly recorded, so you can go back and review it in a way more than you can if you're just having a conversation and you don't remember exactly what somebody said. But I think that, you know, face-to-face interactions are still very meaningful to people, and there's some friendship research that says, you know, it kind of has these levels of maintaining a friendship, and, like, the lowest one would kind of be just, you know, you're liking somebody's status every once in a while, basically just enough to keep it alive. And then the next level would be, like, maintaining the same level of closeness, which you could maybe do on Facebook with a long-distance friend, but you'd have to put some effort into it. And then beyond that, you know, to move a friendship forward, you have to be having memories together. If you're just sort of always talking about the past or the old times when you used to see each other, then you're not creating new memories. You're sort of just living parallel lives and updating each other about them.
The Ralph Northam story has made me wonder if people are going back through their Facebook accounts and looking at pictures and posts that were inappropriate. I mean, we know that, you know, journalists will go back through Twitter and find things that people of a certain amount of fame have said years and years ago. And of course, that can happen on Facebook as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it can. I mean, I hope that nobody has posted a picture of that nature on their Facebook, but, you know, with all the billions of users, it's probably, you know, the chances are good that there's some bad stuff on there. I don't know if people are going back through and culling old Facebook photos or checking up on what they said years ago. They may be, but it's something that we haven't exactly learned how to deal with in terms of just how long do we keep our tweets around? Do we try to do an auto-delete thing? You know, if Twitter and Facebook are still around 15 more years from now, that's a really long record of your life. And kind of how do you parse that and how do you deal with that?
Well, and even now that's an issue for people who might be inclined to move away, to shut down their accounts, because, you know, if they've been on for even 8 or 10 years, that represents kind of a record of their lives. It feels like you're burning a diary.
Yeah, and in my personal life, like, people have said that to me, like, I would leave Facebook, but, you know, I got a lot of pictures on there, and I don't know if I have them backed up in other places. And so you do feel that the archive still has a value, even if maybe now you don't post that much or you don't really look at Facebook that much. It's, you don't want to just, like you said, burn the record of all the memories.
I wonder, too, if we're still just learning how to use this correctly. I mean, in some ways, 15 years in the digital era sounds like a very, very long time. But it is a relatively new thing for humankind. It's been relatively recent that so many billions of people on the planet are on Facebook. Maybe we're still just working our way through what we want this thing to be and what we want it to do for us.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think there's a correct way to use it, but I do think that, like I said, the etiquette is different in different social contexts for how you use these things. And I think there's also been so many eras of Facebook that every time they change it up, you do have to kind of figure it out again. Like, when I first joined, it was like just people's walls, and they had all these like weird apps that you would like draw graffiti on somebody's wall. And now, you know, there wasn't really a news feed or anything like that. And now the news feed is very central to the experience, and people pop up without you having to go seek them out. But then they change the algorithm of the news feed pretty frequently. So for, you know, one period of time, you see a lot of, you know, news articles, and then now it's shifting more towards, we want to see more posts from your friends and family. And so every time there's these changes or different eras of Facebook and the way that they want to orient the site, then you kind of have to rethink how, what you're going to do in response to that.
You think it's changing the way we behave? Is it changing the culture?
Changing what culture?
American culture.
Probably, but I mean, I think it's a very global company, right? So not everybody in the world is on Facebook, of course, but it is pretty big. So I don't think it's necessarily limited to American culture.
My guest is Atlantic senior editor Julie Beck. Her article on the website is called Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Atlantic senior editor Julie Beck. We're talking about her recent article, Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or find us on Twitter at KERAThink. Do you think Facebook has been a factor in the divisiveness that has arisen in America in the last 10 or 15 years politically?
I mean, sure. I think they know that they are, and they've said that they, you know, have the platform has played a role in sort of the divisiveness of political discourse and tribalism and all that, and that's, you know, that gets back into kind of what I said about, you know, how you have these large networks of weak ties. They're probably very different from you, at least, well, you know, more different than you than your close friends are. And so that's probably where you're being exposed to a lot of perspectives that are new to you or that you may disagree with. And so that, of course, can lead to, especially in a very partisan time, some definitely divisive arguments on Facebook. I think we've all seen a comments section that should never have existed on Facebook. But that's, you know, just part of, at least I see it as part of the effect of having this very broad network of weak ties or acquaintances or whatever you want to call them.
It can be pretty terrifying when you've posted something and then your friends who don't know one another but do know you begin to argue among themselves in the section for comments.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I mean, I don't post very much, so knock on wood that hasn't happened to me, but I do see it, and it is a little, it's a little bit like, you know, watching a car wreck in slow motion. It's not great. But, I mean, you know, maybe there are some productive conversations that are happening, too. Or if nothing else, you know, maybe there's somewhere on the medium part of the spectrum, somebody just being exposed to information or an idea that they wouldn't have otherwise seen, and that is compelling to them and that they don't feel the need to argue about in the comments, but they just sort of digest it and take it with them into their life. We can hope.
People have been talking for several years about the fact that surely Facebook can't retain its primacy forever, and yet it has billions of users, many of whom, as we said, have trouble pulling away from it. I think about Google Plus trying and failing to really challenge Facebook. What would it take for something else to come along to fill the role that Facebook has filled for so many people?
I really don't know. It's sort of like trying to imagine what the alien technology would be, you know, if we ever meet aliens. And it's just like, I don't have the framework to even know where to begin with that. Yeah, Google Plus did not work out. Wasn't so great. There was, you know, what was it, Elo for a while. They were trying to have a thing. But yeah, I think it's hard to guess, especially because the environment of the internet in which Facebook started was very different than the environment of the internet we have today. So, you know, it was already very successful before we got to this point where, you know, the internet is taking the shape that it has now. And so I don't know. I think it might have to be something entirely different that is more suited to today's environment, I guess.
I'm also interested in Facebook as a source of kind of vindictive entertainment. Maybe that's the wrong word. There are people, I think, who go on Facebook deliberately to be annoyed by their nominal friends and the things that they post.
Well, sure. Sometimes righteous anger is a fun emotion, but I don't know. Maybe people are doing that, but I think, you know, you also have the sort of middle option of just muting people, right? If you don't want to unfriend them and maybe seem rude or cause some kind of conflict, you can always just mute them from your newsfeed and then you don't have to see that anymore.
Are you on Facebook at all professionally or is it just a personal thing for you?
I don't have a professional Facebook account where, like, people could follow me or I post my articles or anything like that. I tend to use Twitter more for that. I have a personal Facebook. I don't post on it too much anymore. But, again, it's sort of a thing where it's, like, I have a lot of photos on there that I don't – I think I have backed up somewhere, but I'm not sure, so I don't want to lose those. And it's honestly a great reporting tool. Because there are so many people on there, and if you are looking for, you know, regular people who have experienced X, Y, or Z thing, chances are there's a Facebook group for that, or you can find people that way.
Going back to Twitter and the way that you use it professionally, you talked about the fact, and I think this is so true, that it's often like shouting into the void. What have you learned? I know you've done some other reporting on social media. What have you learned about what makes a particular post work virally and why some of them just kind of die on the vine?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I have definitely not reported about, you know, what makes things go viral or not. And I think that's a sort of I think people have studied it, but I couldn't tell you. I think that, you know, each platform sort of has its own quirks and its own, I guess, flavor. But Facebook is sort of the one where I think it's the broadest. You know, journalists love Twitter, but not everybody loves Twitter. And Instagram feels a little more personal still. It's getting a little different with the addition of stories and all that. I think that's changing things. But Facebook still sort of feels like the default, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I remember a time when mail that came into the house tended to be all bills, but email was exciting. And it's remarkable how quickly email has become just a utilitarian thing.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, sort of the business aspect of email makes it feel not fun. Personal emails are still sometimes fun if your friends will write you an email. And I think that too, you know, there's been a lot of email newsletters popping up lately. At least it seems to me like a lot of, you know, publications are starting newsletters or people are writing newsletters for their friends. And I think maybe that's sort of a reaction to the way the context collapse on Facebook. Maybe they don't want everybody to see what they're posting, or maybe they want to write something a little more long form, like, you know, we might have done on a live journal or something back in the day. And so to some degree, I think email is serving that function for people again.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Our number, 1-800-933-5372. Morgan is calling from Arlington. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Chris. My question for the guest is, I find that I use Facebook quite a bit, really just as an address book to connect with new contacts between different types of work circles. And so I'm wondering if she knows of anything being developed maybe not to completely take over Facebook as a platform, but just as like a mobile address book. I mean, like, people don't really use Yellow Pages or physical phone books anymore. So just wanted to see what that looks like, because that's why I generally keep my Facebook open. And I will take the call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody is developing something like that, but I have heard a lot of people say they use Facebook in that way, too. Like, they're, you know, they just want to know when their friends' birthdays are because they don't remember, but Facebook will remind them, and then they'll tell them happy birthday, you know, off of Facebook. So it is a very useful database of information. And it also makes me think of, I feel like in our phones, it functions that way, like your contacts to a certain degree. Like, you just have the phone number of everybody that you've put in there since probably whatever first time you got a smartphone or something like that. So there are a lot of sort of vestigial people lingering in there too.
It is interesting when you get those kind of plaintive requests on social media, like, my phone is lost, or it fell overboard or something, and I hadn't uploaded all my data. Please send me your phone numbers. And you wonder about the people that, you know, never get the message or think this is the perfect time to separate from this person in terms of having them have my phone number.
Yeah, I think that used to happen a lot more, at least in my experience. I think, because now if you get a new phone, you keep the same phone number usually, so it would have to be some kind of situation where you couldn't for some reason. But yeah, I mean, it is a big loss, because we don't really tend to memorize people's phone numbers anymore, or even birthdays, like with Facebook. I know a few of my good friends' birthdays off the top of my head, but a lot of people I'm like, it's in March sometime, and so I'll look at Facebook in March and just remind myself of the actual day.
So earlier you talked about how peculiar it can be to get birthday greetings from people that you might not know in any other context except on Facebook, or hadn't contacted in, you know, years. Do you dislike that? Does it seem weird to you to hear from someone, you know, your second grade piano teacher?
I mean, I think it's sweet. I mean, it does make me happy. I'm not like mad that they wrote me happy birthday. But it's just interesting to see who chooses to use that platform every year, I guess, mm-hmm. because, you know, my closer friends, I'll probably see them or do something for my birthday, or, you know, have a phone call, or they might text me or something like that. And sometimes they might also post something on Facebook and then do something in another platform too. And so it's just sort of a strange mishmash of folks. And I think it's nice, you know, it's certainly nice to hear from people on your birthday. It makes you feel special, but you're also, it's interesting for sure.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. It does create a certain kind of pressure, though, because if people have wished you happy birthday, then you have to think, like, you know, I might not ordinarily acknowledge the birthday of someone who was my kid's daycare teacher 15 years ago, but now I feel like I need to be on top of that. It's just one more thing to keep track of.
But do you remember? I mean, like, if your birthday is whatever, say it's in February, and then the piano teacher's birthday is 3 months later, do you remember, like, oh, goodness, like, she wished me happy birthday, I gotta get in there and reciprocate?
No, not always, but I do. But then I think, is this, maybe this person wrote me on my birthday, and are they gonna notice if I haven't written them on their birthday? I'm terrible about birthdays. Like, I wish that it was off Facebook and that nobody ever acknowledged anyone's birthday, because I'm not gonna remember unless someone tells me.
Oh, I mean, I just don't wish people happy birthday on Facebook at all, and that's my solution. Sorry if anyone's listening to this and they wrote me happy birthday, I didn't say anything, but I think I'll text people, or I'll do it in some other format. I think it's just easier that way for me.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Nate is calling from Dallas. Hi, Nate.
Hey there. Love the show. First time, long time.
Welcome.
My comment was, well, the comment and then just a question. The comment was Facebook usage for me, and I came into social media late in the game. I'm an old dad. But I've found myself in the last few years using Facebook more for, like you were talking about, the groups. Like for me, I'm a big fan of cycling, and so I use basically Facebook groups for cycling and for mostly shopping. What I was going to get to is I use it for shopping a lot now, but it's what's replaced Facebook for me has been our family group text, just on our cell phone, with texting each other in a group, and we make jokes about it now during family get-togethers, is how that's our new social media. And it's if I go back to it, it goes back years, and we use it for photos and data and information. And right now, since I've talked to you, there's probably been three or four what we call now posts in our family group text. And it's just, I don't know if you've seen the trend in that, if that's something that's normal, or what your take is on that.
Well, thanks for calling, Nate.
I don't know if it's a trend, but I do think it's interesting because we're at this point with Facebook now where it's 15 years old. We pretty much know what it is. Even if you don't use Facebook, you pretty much get it. And people for whom that doesn't really work for whatever social group that they're talking about, whether for you guys it's your family or if it's you know, a group of long distance friends, then people will either sort of hack Facebook to make it work for them, either by making a group or something like that, or they will do something else. And so maybe that's a group text. I know people who use Slack, which is kind of a work chat platform, but some people use it for friends. And so I think now we're at a place where if it doesn't work for you, you can figure out another way.
I actually love that Nate's family communicates and really embraces this group text, because I know a lot of people who, putting them into a group text is like giving them a punishment. And every time their phone pings, they just get a little more angry.
Well, it is a lot of notifications. And that, I mean, that's a whole nother thing, you know. We'd get so many notifications now, so I can understand why people would be frustrated with that. But, you know, maybe that's why you would do a Facebook group, or you would do like a group chat kind of a thing like Slack, and you could turn off the notifications and just check in, or do an email thread, and whatever works for you. I think people are getting very ingenious with that.
Julie Beck is senior editor at The Atlantic. You can find her essay, Facebook, Where Friendships Go to Never Quite Die, on the Atlantic website. Julie, it's been great to talk with you. Thanks for making time for us.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. It was great.